You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, Bubba Carpenter in studio, we'll talk the Arkansas-Texas A&M series. We'll look forward to this Little Rock series coming up beginning tomorrow night at Baum Walker Stadium. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
You know, I didn't play any of these games this weekend or this last weekend, but when I left the ballpark Friday night, I was just exhausted from sitting there all day. Then, you know, you go home, you got a tornado warning you got to sit through. I had a sick kid at home. I mean, and come Saturday, I just didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to sleep. And I was thinking about all this yesterday, about how just tired I was throughout the weekend and how nice it was to be away from the ballpark. And then I was talking to Chris Curry this morning, the Little Rock coach whose team is coming up here for the series this midweek. And he said that whenever he used to work for Dave Van Horn, that Van Horn would tell him, if you are feeling tired, then the players are absolutely exhausted. And I was thinking about that and just kind of my own story and how tired the players must be after playing all that baseball in a short amount of time last week.
Yeah, you're right. I think you asked Dave that question.
I did.
Seven games in 8 days or something like that. And you know, they kind of look like it on game two, especially after the Lightning delay. Things just after that, just nothing seemed right. I think that's the part. I was doing great. Of course, I'm just sitting up there doing nothing. I was doing great till the Lightning delay, and that made that day just seem super long. It was only, what, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, something mm-hmm. like that. But, yeah, it's a lot of playing for those guys. And, you know, when you get in the pro ball, you're playing almost every day, and so you're used to it. But in college, you're not used to that. So that's a lot of games in a short amount of time.
It was like that Lightning delay just killed the adrenaline. Not momentum, just the adrenaline. Everybody's adrenaline was going all day long, and then you're kind of done.
Yeah, not to mention the crowd. I don't know how many were there, 10,000.
They filed out during that.
10,000, 11,000, whatever. The energy in the stadium, you got Jimenez on the mound. You just felt like everything was going our way. And then after that, it was just
like nothing. The balloon popping.
Yeah, yep. Just nothing.
I asked Dave, like Bubba alluded to, I asked Dave Van Horn after the game last Friday. I get the days mixed up because the whole day it felt like a Saturday to me.
It did.
And then Saturday felt like Sunday, and I don't know what yesterday felt like. But I asked him afterward, I said, you know, you played all these games. Did you sense that your team was tired? And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, you could tell our guys were tired. The second game, they were tired. And, you know, we were hoping that we could get through it, find a way to win it. But they, you know, you could just say they were just a little bit tardy with some swings. But, you know, A&M, they're really good. We just didn't finish today.
So A&M wins two of three last week to take this series. And people might look at this and say, well, you know, A&M was tired too. And they played the same amount of games as Arkansas. But what they did was A&M had an extra day to prepare for this series because they had played a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I think that makes a huge difference, don't you? And especially in terms of how the pitching is used. Like Landon Bynalsee ends up throwing not just on short rest, but on like 2 days short rest. It just felt like, and we talked about this when you were in here last week, the rain delays, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it just feels like that is advantageous for the road team. And I felt like it was certainly that way this last week.
I think so, Matt. And I honestly, I don't know if it's the physical fatigue or the mental fatigue. I think mentally, you're just drained after that much baseball in that short of time. And then, like I said, you factor in the Lightning delay and all that. But the thing that would always get me is mentally, I'd just be like, you know, you're just – especially when things aren't going great. I mean, if things are going great, you want to play every day. But when they're not, you know, it's like it can wear on you a little bit.
And it can wear on you too, I think, with the way that these games went. You know, you look back through the box score here, A&M scored in the first inning of every single game. Yeah. There was never a chance for Arkansas during this series to kind of take its breath, you know, get itself settled into the game. It was like they were playing from behind almost at all times. And I know they got a big lead in that in the first game of the doubleheader, but there was always kind of a sense of urgency in these games that I think can really take a toll on a team.
I think so. And if you think back to Zach Root's first inning, you know, he really didn't pitch bad, gave up a run, gave up a couple of ground balls that were really close to being outs or double play balls. Mm-hmm. So he could have gotten out of that inning with no trouble at all. But, you know, and then the second inning, he leadoff guy, I think he's seven-hole hitter, hits an 0-2 pitch, mm-hmm. Base hit it like 107, which still frustrates me. It's okay. If you're going to give up an 0-2 hit, it can be like a blooper or jam shot or something he reaches. But when a guy hits it 107, you got to make a better pitch than that. I feel like we gave up a few too many 0-2 pitches, 0-2 hard hit balls this weekend. But that's just me. I'm old school. I think things are changing a little bit in the mindset of what you do with an 0-2 pitch. But you know, overall, you know, Zach didn't look that bad. I mean, had some good pitches, you know, made a couple mistakes, and they made him pay for it.
Chase LaViolette, boy, that guy is really good. Before he came to the plate, I think it was in the finale, I turned to somebody sitting next to me. I said, I bet this guy's in Major League Baseball within probably 2 years. And next pitch, 395 off the video board. I mean, he was just incredible this weekend.
So he's good. He's really good. And the thing about him is he's not just a hitter. He plays really good center field.
I was surprised at how well he was able to cover in center field. I mean, for a guy that big to move that quickly and cover that much ground was really striking.
Yeah, he moves well, throws well. I mean, he does everything. He's a good player. He's going to play – you're right, he's going to play in the big leagues. And it seemed like when we left a fastball over the plate, he hammered it. I don't know if he missed the fastball all weekend. When we threw it in the zone, he hammered.
Fouch got him one time with the fastball. He blew one fastball by him.
No, well, that's Fouch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like it was like a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But
you look, anytime we left something over the middle of the plate, boy, mm-hmm. it got smoked. Left center, right center. So he's a good player.
I'm very impressed with him. He's not Caglione. And, you know, we kind of made that comparison last week, but he's really good. And you think back to that class of hitters that came into the SEC with him. I mean, you got Colby Shelton at Florida, who's really good. And you've got Ethan Petrie at South Carolina and Ike Irish at Auburn. And he wasn't a true freshman in that class, but he was classified as a freshman. That was Charlie Condon's freshman year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was just that's been an incredible class of players in the SEC, and you know, I felt like LaViolette, it almost felt like there were times during the series where you had LaViolette on one side and then you had Vahiva on Arkansas side, where it was like they were just going mano a mano.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's going on with the other eight players on the field, it was like, okay, he did this, I'm going to come to the plate now and I'm going to do this. And I just felt like it was watching two All-Americans at their absolute best.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. I mean, I love watching good baseball players. I don't care. I mean, if they're on the other team, I respect good baseball players and the way they play the game. I love the way he plays the game. Doesn't do all that stupid stuff. Hits a bomb, you know, puts bat down, runs around the bases, does it the right way like he's expected to do it. You know, and the same with Vahiva, the exact same thing. What gets me about Vahiva is, you know, before the season started, how many scouts you say, oh, well, he can't play shortstop at the next level. He can't make all the plays. Well, what play can he not make?
I don't know if there is one defensively.
Yeah, you know, it's so frustrating to listen to some of these guys talk.
How much of that do you think, though, is based on what the word was about him after that freshman year at Sacramento State where he wasn't playing well defensively? I think he came here with like a – I don't remember what the exact number was, but I mean, it was like 914, 920 something fielding percentage. It wasn't great.
Yeah, but you should be able to see the potential in him. I mean, he's got all that. He's got the tools. The tools are all there. And, you know, Dave's really good at developing infielders. And I think they've done a phenomenal job with him. And he just – I don't know a play that he can't make. Mm. And, you know, I look at Jalen Battles when he was here. You know, they'd say the same thing about him. Well, we don't know if he can play at the next level. He might have to move over to third base. Boy, I just think Vejeva, you look at the jump throw he made, mm-hmm. the Jeter play. Then he came in and fielded a slow roller barehanded. Mm-hmm. Makes plays behind second base. I mean, he just covers so much ground. He's got a great first step with good instinct. And, you know, I know the question was about Lavalette versus him, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'll take Vejeva, I think, every time, just because he's playing a great shortstop. Plus, he's getting it done at the plate.
Well, they're both going to be first-round picks, I think, in July. Yeah. I think that's really the bottom line. And Davalin played really well for mm-hmm. Arkansas, too. You know, he didn't have a very good series against Georgia. And maybe it's not even fair to say he didn't have a good series. He did not have a series up to the standard of play that, you know, we've seen from him. But what he and Vejeva did during this series, I got to find the numbers here, 13 for 28 combined, 9 runs, 4 RBI in 3 games between the two of them. Vejeva homered twice. He doubled once. Davalin doubled twice. Michael Early, the Texas A&M coach, afterwards said, quote, "Those top two hitters in that lineup are freaking really, really good, man. They're really tough to pitch to."
Yeah, he's right. Yeah. Well, even against Georgia, I thought Davalin hits the balls hard. He hit a couple balls left field that normally are either home runs or off the wall. And even this weekend, he hit multiple balls over 100 miles an hour. They got caught. Hit a couple out to center. They got caught. I think it's just so nice to see a really good leadoff hitter do his thing. I mean, if you need a base hit to left, he hits base hit to left. You make a mistake, he's going to hit it off the scoreboard. Plus, he's got some oppo power. You know, I always feel good when Davalin's at the plate because you know who's up behind him.
Yeah. Well, and there's that ability to respond, too. Think about the fifth inning of, I think it's the finale. All of them are kind of running together for me. But A&M scores 2. Laviolette hits a home run top of the inning. And here comes Davalin starting off the next inning with a base hit. And then Vejeva gets a hit. And it's just like when they need a hit, those two in particular are supplying it for the team more often than not.
Yeah, and then if you get Maxwell going, which Maxwell took some really good swings. The ball he hit the left field. I mean, he smoked that ball. It's like 102, I think, off the bat, something like that. Left fielder made a good catch on it. You know, and I think Dave even referred to that. If he gets under it just a 16th of an inch, it's a home run. Or, you know, just if it's a little bit either way, it's a double. So, I mean, it's crazy. But that could have changed that game.
So, just in general, you mentioned 0-2 pitching. What do you think went wrong for Arkansas? Like, as they go back and they kind of piece together everything either yesterday or today, what are they going to see in their review of this series, you know, where they say, if we fix this, this, and this, we've got a different outcome?
I don't know. I get it. There's a three-pitch metric where you want to try to get an out within 3 pitches. But I just see a lot of 0-2 pitches getting hit real hard. And, you know, I'm from the old school. It's, you know, coming up in the minor leagues and even in the big leagues. Guys got fined. If you gave up an 0-2 hit, you got fined. Huh. And there was one example. Fisher had someone 0-2 throws a slider away. Helfrich set up away. Would have hit his glove perfectly. But in order to hit the glove, the ball's going to break across the middle of the zone. Lefty hooks it down the line for a double. Stuff like that. I just feel like, I don't know. And who am I to question, you know, the pitch calling and all that? I mean, I probably shouldn't even do it. But I just – It's me seeing a lot of balls hit 0-2 count. Now, you, on the flip side of that, an 0-2 walk was the same thing. It was fine. If you get 0-2 on a hitter and you mess around and walk him, that's a fine also. So you got to find that happy medium. I just know you get certain guys in an 0-2 count, they're in swing mode. I think there needs to be a chase pitch. A pit ball has to be off the plate. And maybe they're trying to do that. I don't know. And they're just missing their spots. But I think you got to be a little bit better 0-2.
How frustrating did you think it was? Because it looked like, from a forecast perspective, they missed Saturday's forecast, which changes things, because then you don't have to play those two games on Friday. Then you're able to throw Landon Vitalsies on maybe a more normal rest. It just and I don't, you know, I know it rained after Friday's games, but it certainly looked like everything would have been okay to play on Saturday up here.
Well, I was outside all day Saturday mowing and messing around. So, yeah, you could have it didn't hardly rain on Saturday.
Barely at all.
Yeah. So, you know, that's tough to forecast, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got, you know, I know Dave's got multiple laps that they look at, and everything said rain all day Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, all week I looked at it, rain all day, and it just went away. And, you know, you can't really blame anyone, I guess. It's just, it is what it is. It's the weather, and it's tough to predict here in Northwest Arkansas. But that did have a huge effect. I think if we play a traditional Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I think we win the series. I think if we don't have the lightning delay, we win the series.
Hmm. A lot of what ifs, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, well, it goes back to the whole what if thing, you know. And look, you know, it's like the O2 thing. I mean, maybe we bounce an 0-2 pitch and they hit the 1-2 pitch. I mean, you don't know. I mean, it's baseball.
Yeah.
You know, it'll break your heart, right?
Okay, so about asking what went wrong, what went right over this series?
Well, two things that really stood out for me is Gackle. Mm-hmm. Gackle went really right, and I think Dylan Carter went really right. And then even getting Gage back. Look, Gage – you know, Gage had a rough inning, but his fastball was up to 98. His spin rate on his slider was ridiculous. A ton of break on it. Just wasn't locating it. For me, that's exciting. I don't care if he only got one out. His stuff was electric. And having him back is going to be a different game changer. But Gackle coming in and doing what he did. Fastball, he located to both sides of the plate. Slider was phenomenal. That's two really good pluses right there.
Gackle, we've talked about this, about how some pitchers are more comfortable out of the bullpen. He didn't do anything different on Friday. I'm getting these days mixed up still. But he didn't do anything different necessarily in terms of innings or pitches or anything like that. It's just that he came out of the bullpen to do it, and he looked like a totally different pitcher.
So I look at a guy's body language, Matt. And I even made a comment to Phil. It might have been on there, might have been off there between innings, I don't know. But I said, look at his body language. I mean, he had his swagger back that you haven't seen in a while. I mean, he was in total control. You could see it on his face, just his body. It was like he'd get the ball, and you just knew he was getting ready to shove. I mean, he just had a totally different look. Now, it helped that we got a lead. And he was able to go out there and relax and throw his pitches. I think that did a lot for him, too.
But he came in without the lead.
Exactly.
And he came in a stressful situation and got him out of it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it. Maybe, you know, some guys are just better out of the pen. They just do a better job. And I don't know why. I probably need to ask Matt Hobbs about that. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I've talked to pitchers about this before, and they say that whenever you're coming out of the bullpen that you just have to react. You get that call, you get up, you're in the game probably within 10 minutes of real time, if not less. And when you're thinking or when you know you're going to start, say you're going to start on a Saturday, you're thinking about it Monday, and you're thinking about it Tuesday, and you're thinking about it Wednesday and Thursday. And then by the time you actually get out there, you may have just totally psyched yourself out, and you're not going to pitch well. So I wonder if we might see this more with him, especially with Wood. You know, Wood, he's got to build his pitch count up. He threw 20 the other day. I don't know what he'll throw this week, but I suspect it'll be like 30, 35 pitch max. And so I wonder if maybe we start to see this where maybe Gackle – piggybacks on Wood, maybe with somebody in between, and you try to start him, but it's almost like reverse starting him. You start him, say, in the fourth inning and say, go as far as you can.
Well, okay, so like we could use Gage, Bybee, Gackle like this weekend.
Like Bybee is your setup man in the third inning.
Yeah, exactly.
that's what it is.
I mean, seriously. Or Gackle, just if there's a high leverage situation in the fourth inning, you bring him in the fourth inning. If it's in the sixth inning, bring him in the sixth inning. But you've still got Root and Jimenez. They work great off of each other. You got Gackle and they can work off of Gage once Gage gets his pitches back. I mean, you've got so many options. And then you've got Dylan Carter just absolutely dealing. He can fill any role. He could come in a long role or in a short leverage situation.
I thought Arkansas was going to win the third game because of what Carter and Gackle had done at the back end. I mean, they gave them 9 2/3 mm-hmm. total. That's a game that you get from two relief pitchers. And so it set up the bullpen really well for that final game. And A&M, their bullpen has not been good all year. Weston Moss is really good. And, you know, he leaves an impression this last weekend. But I thought really maybe the most valuable player of the series was Luke Jackson and what he did there at the end, because I did not expect to see that from him.
So going into game three, I felt like we had it won. I felt really good about it. I would have put everything on us winning if I were betting on that game. I looked at Patton's numbers. I just felt like we were going to light him up. And then, like I said, once we got to the bullpen, I felt really good about it. He came in. I want to say Luke Jackson's ERA in conference play was like 20-something mm-hmm. in conference games, like 26 or something like that. He just threw a lot of fastballs, mixed in a few breaking balls, but he was predominantly fastballs, and just he located them, threw some up in the zone, hit some spots. I mean, he just really went out there and pitched, and you know, we just we had no answer for him.
Dave Inhorn was asked about Gabe Gackle and pitching from the bullpen, and this is what he had to say after that game the other day.
Yeah, I just think that it was just a change for him from this year, because that's what he did last year, and that's what all his accolades are about. You know, I mean, they're him coming out of the pen last year, he's really good at it, and you know, so we have some options with him. We can start somebody and just plan on throwing him a few and let him pick it up from there. Or we can bring him in the eighth inning to close the game out, or the ninth, or the sixth, or whatever. I mean, it gives us another option out of our bullpen if that's the way we go with it. We just need to get Gage built up, get him back out there, and you know, it should help us down the stretch.
I think that they may have found something with Gabe Gackle over the weekend. This could be something positive for them moving forward, because they just haven't been getting enough starter innings. And it feels like even if he's not pitching in a starting role, he's still a starter. It's just you're kind of having to reverse engineer how you use him on those days.
Yeah, I think so. And the bottom line is getting 27 outs. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you get 27 outs? If he gets them in the front of the game or the end of the game, middle of the game, who cares? As long as you're getting those outs. And he looked good. Hopefully we'll keep it going this weekend. But a lot of people, I think, are overreacting to the A&M series. They're playing great.
They're phenomenal.
Baseball.
They're a great. If they figure out a couple of more pieces in that bullpen, I would not want to see them at all. Like, they go to Texas this weekend. I'm very interested to see how this series goes, because A&M's red hot. You know, they got motivation going in for that series. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they go in there and win that one.
I think so. And
they've won at Tennessee and Arkansas.
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
The teams they've lost to, and then those are their two series wins on the road.
I think the thing is, though, I look at Prager. Prager's not the same dude he was last year.
No.
I thought we did a great job. I didn't even mention that. I thought our offense did a great job against Prager. Moss came in and just threw the changeup. And it's not that we had bad at bats against, I think he just executed. I knew he threw Vejeva a 3-2 change in a situation with runners on base, painted it, you know, down and away. And you know, you got to tip your hat sometimes to the pitcher. But I think that the game that frustrated me was against Patton. I just felt like we had some bad at-bats against Patton. We chased some fastballs up in the zone. I don't know if he's got kind of this funky windup and kind of a weird short-arm delivery. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of threw us off a little bit. He's only throwing 89-90, but he had some carry on his ball at the top of the zone. We kept swinging at that. But overall, I mean, they're a good team. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the 2022 Ole Miss team. Mm-hmm. They came into Fayetteville and they were scuffling. I remember looking at their lineup thinking, okay, stud, stud, stud. How are they not winning games? They had DeLucia as their Friday night guy. Mm-hmm. I want to say they beat us on Friday night and then we spanked mm-hmm. them the next two games. But this team reminds me of them, except they're not quite as good. But the lineup's pretty good. Caden Kent is a tough out, walks, you know, battles up there.
I thought he's a heck of a shortstop too.
Oh my gosh, made some great plays.
Like
all
you watch
weekend.
His footwork on yeah. some of those ground balls, and I mean it was elite looking stuff.
Yeah. And then at the plate he's just a tough out. I mean, I don't think he mailed in at bat all weekend. Battled off, fouled off pitches till he got one he liked.
Caden Sorrell, like him a lot.
Yeah, he's healthy now.
Wyatt Hunsler, I was impressed with some of the at-bats that he had. Even down at the bottom, like Royo, he had didn't have a great weekend, but then he had the home run against Gibbler out of the Lightning delay that totally, you know, kind of – I mean, if the Lightning delay didn't suck the air out of the stadium, that home run did.
Okay, well, you know, if you're a hitter, like Gibbler – and I love Cole Gibber. He's going to be a stud. I mean, he already is a stud. He bounced a couple sliders, and they weren't even close. So if you're a hitter, Matt, you're going to step out and say, okay, he is not going to – it's 3-1 count. You're sitting dead red fastball. You know he's not going to throw a slider there, so you can cheat to the fastball. I think that's what he did. He cheated to the fastball, got the barrel there, and hit a home run.
Okay, so Arkansas, after 35 games, they were 32-3. They've gone 2-4. Over the last six, and those are the six games without Nolan Souza. We sat here last week, and I made a comment that now I'm second-guessing, that I said I think if there was a position where you could potentially withstand this, it would be second base. And maybe they still can. But I think maybe I was a little bit too all-in on Gabe Frazier based on what we had seen against Vanderbilt. I was surprised he didn't play more in this A&M series. Why do you think he didn't play more? Was it the fact that he's a left-hander and they're throwing all these left-handed pitchers? I mean, because that was a little bit surprising to me that they were going with a different lineup. And I guess that, you know, maybe that – to me it looks like when you go with a whole lot of – and I know it wasn't a whole lot of new players, but there were, you know, two or three new players in different positions in a lot of these games. It just seems like that's not the continuity that you've had as a team.
Right. Okay, so to the first part of that, I compare Gavin Grohovic's injury to the Souza injury. When Grohovic went down, all of a sudden, their lineup just couldn't produce. A&M's lineup couldn't produce. I mean, you look, even Lavalette went downhill. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone struggled.
They went into a tailspin for about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, and that was huge. And I kind of see with Souza having that same effect. I mean, the guy plays great defense. I mean, he covers a ton of ground. Plus, he's hitting down in the lineup. He's starting to hit the ball well. Once he gets on base, he's a threat on the bases to steal.
He was taking his walks.
Yeah, I mean, he just finds a way to get on base and make things happen, even though his batting average is down. I mean, but at second base, he's steady. That's huge, losing him. But to your question about Frazier, I think he's had a tight hammy, so I think that had something to do with it. But, you know, we got to find an answer there. You know, Kojal, you know, he's played great at first base. He can slide over, play second. If Frazier can't do it, Frazier's a freshman, but he's talented. Mm-hmm. And he's good and he knows he's good. I don't think the moment's going to get too big for him. So I think eventually he's going to be good. But having Pepe back in the lineup, Kojal, I mean, there's some flexibility there. I think it's going to take them a little bit to adjust to not having Souza in the lineup.
Pepe, it was his first time playing since the Ole Miss series, I think. Is that right?
It's been a while.
I think he's been okay to play for the last couple of weeks. There just hasn't been really an opportunity to get into the game. He had a couple of really bad at-bats, swinging at pitches up above his head. The at-bats have got to be better, I feel like, for him to be able to stay in the lineup.
So, for me, the hardest pitch to lay off of when you haven't seen live at bats in a while is the high fastball.
Is it?
So I think it was just a bad combination.
And those were the pitches that seemed to really eat him up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, really all three of those guys were good at pitching at the top of the zone. Not a ton of velocity, but they're good at pitching at the top of the zone. And, you know, you look at Paxton, there's something about the way he threw the ball, and I didn't talk to any of the hitters, but that ball, they just didn't see it well out of his hand. And so I'm going to give him an excuse there. But that's a tough pitch. When you haven't hit in a while, that ball looks good coming up there, and you're like, yes, yes, yes. And then you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah. But there's an important importance, I feel like, in finding continuity in your lineup. And because for so long, this team this year, through those first 35 games, I'd say probably 25 to 30, they came to the ballpark, and they knew, for the most part, what the lineup was going to look like. These guys are going to hit 1 through 3. These guys are going to hit 4, 5, 6 in some order, and these guys are going to be your 7, 8, 9 hitters. And now it feels like there's a lot of, okay, what do we do to make this all work?
Well, and another thing with Souza, he's kind of a quiet leader on the team. You know, if you, there's a lot of he brings a lot of attributes, but I mean he's gone. We got to move on, and there's the guys to do it, Matt. And we've got the guys to do it. It's just gonna be a little bit of mix and matching. You know, there might be some days Kojal's at first. Frazier at second, and then if there's a tough lefty, then they flip it and they put Pepe there. I mean, Dave will figure it out. It'll just take a little bit of time, but it's different when you're a lineup and you're so used to that, you know, that same camaraderie, that same lineup. You take someone out of it, it changes everything. It's crazy how baseball's a mental game.
Well, there's probably some mentality there too, where the players are, and I'm sure they have moved past it now, but just that initial hurt of seeing your buddy, your friend, your teammate go down with the type of injury that he has and the disappointment that there is there for him, I would have to think that probably plays a little bit of a factor in maybe what you've seen over the last couple of weeks. I did ask Dave Van Horn after the game the other night. I said, is there any type of overarching theme that you're seeing over the last couple of weeks that's got to get cleaned up before you get on the field again? And this is what he had to say.
Well, you know, we've got to get some things situated. You know, we don't have Souza at second base anymore. And, you know, our shortstop just keeps making play after play. And we need to make sure that we continue to play really good defense. We got to get a few guys going offensively. You know, last weekend it was who it was. And, you know, Davlin didn't have a great weekend last weekend. He had a great three games this weekend. Aloy's been good every weekend, and you know, Cahill's been pretty good. But then it's been just a little bit of here and there. We just need to get a few more guys rolling, and we can put up some bigger innings.
Dave Van Horn following the series last week. When we come back, we got more to talk about. Little Rock coming to town. We some insights into the Trojans after talking with Chris Curry this morning. Also more on the Razorbacks lineup. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. There's a big weekend for recruiting for Razorback football. You can find those stories there. You can subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. You can find our podcast on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports, or we've got a video version on our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page. You can subscribe there as well. Arkansas playing Little Rock this week, Tuesday-Wednesday games, 6:30 first pitch on Tuesday night at Baum Walker Stadium. They're also going to play at 5 o'clock on Wednesday night. In this Wednesday game, you know, usually when you play the in-state teams, you play them at 4 on a Wednesday. They bump this one back to 5 because they've got an SEC Network television window that they're going to play this in. We haven't seen a whole lot of midweek games get onto the network, but that's starting to change a little bit this year. This is the second time we've seen this.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But it's going to be fun with them coming to town. I love it when Chris Curry brings his team in town.
Yeah.
It's always a lot of fun. And they're going to be a good team. They're going to play fundamental. You know, Chris is a kind of a chip off the old block when it comes to like DVH, you know. So he, there's a lot of similarities there in the way they manage.
Yeah, well, and he played for Ron Polk, so I mean he's got some good bloodlines, so to speak, there.
Yeah.
Little Rock, 18-20 overall, 7-7 in the Ohio Valley. But Bubba, they had an 8-game winning streak up until Saturday. Western Illinois got them in the series finale down in Little Rock. That 8-game win streak included a win last week over Ole Miss. So in Oxford, 7-3. So we know that this is a team that has got the capability in the midweek to go, you know, into a good program's park and win a game. We've seen them do that here.
Yeah, they've done it here. And like I said, they're going to come in and play fundamental baseball. And, you know, it's not rocket science. Anything can happen on a Tuesday or Wednesday night in the SEC. We see it every week. And I was so proud. I texted Chris after the game when they beat Ole Miss, because not a big fan of Ole Miss, so anyone that could beat them, especially his team, I was super excited about that for him.
He told me this morning, he said that they went to Oxford. He said, listen to this. They had actually had a rain affected series that weekend Arkansas and Missouri played. They were playing Lindenwood in Little Rock, and I guess the Ohio Valley has some more flexibility than the SEC does in their scheduling, and so they were able to play Lindenwood in a doubleheader on Monday. Then they went to UCA on Wednesday, played there, went from there to Moorhead, Kentucky, to play a series against Moorhead State, and then drove from Moorhead, Kentucky to Oxford and won that game before they were able to get home to Little Rock.
See, players don't get tired. When you're in college, I don't remember ever being tired physically. I think I was tired mentally. But you know how, you know, when you're going into Ole Miss and playing them on a Tuesday night, you're going to be pumped up. Mm-hmm. If there's any fatigue, it goes away.
Adrenaline can take you a long way. That was also an early game.
Yeah.
That was Ole Miss's elementary school game.
That's right. That's
right. Have you ever been to an elementary school game?
In pro ball, we used to do those 11 o'clock games. Yeah, and it's crazy.
A guaranteed headache is the women's basketball team always does this elementary school game at Bud Walton early in the season in November. And, I mean, you just walk out of there, and they just scream. They don't know who they're screaming for or what they're screaming. They just scream. That's all they do.
Yeah, it's like that in baseball, too. Especially
at least you're o'clock. Outside. Like, the noise can escape up into the atmosphere a little bit more than it can in a – basketball arena.
I think it's always that you're frustrated because you had a night game the day before, and then you've got an early game the next day, and so you're like, oh, here we go. But yeah.
So Little Rock, they're playing well. And you know what's interesting is that Arkansas is catching a lot of teams right now that if you look at their record, it doesn't really you just kind of glance over it maybe. But A&M, they come in here with this long win streak, and certainly they play well. Now you got Little Rock, and it's a little bit different playing a midweek team, and I get that. You go to Florida this weekend. They just had a 7-game winning streak snapped yesterday at Mississippi State. Yeah. So it's like all these teams are kind of getting right as they hit Arkansas' schedule.
I mean, Florida's playing good right now. I mean, they've won – had up until then, they've won 5 SEC games in a row, hadn't they? Mm-hmm. So, of course, 3 of those were Missouri, so I don't know if those count as 3 wins.
They count. They count.
But a lot of it's just timing of when you play a team. And if we'd have played A&M 3 weeks ago, we sweep them, you know. But now they're hot, and now it looks like we're going to get Florida when they're starting to come around and feel good. And so, you know, a lot of it's timing, and you know, unfortunately, it is what it is.
Chris told me that Little Rock is going to start Zach Busick. He's a right-hander from England, Arkansas. He was on the mound for this Ole Miss game last week. They used him more as kind of an opener in that game against Ole Miss. I think he pitched 3 innings, maybe 3 1/3. But he's also a weekend relief-type guy for them. So I don't know that you're going to see him a whole lot, but I would suspect that you're an in-state kid. You're playing the Razorbacks. There's probably going to be a lot of excitement for him tomorrow night, and that can go one way or the other.
When we play them, typically they have a lot of Arkansas kids. Now he's Curry's starting to get to the point where they're reaching out now. They're recruiting from outside of Arkansas.
Two of their really good players have come from a Los Angeles community college, and they've got another one from, I think they've got multiple players from Meridian, which is where Chris played, and he was a head coach for a little while. But yeah, I mean, to your point, there are a lot of Arkansas players, though, on this roster.
And when you get a lot of Arkansas kids coming in to play at Baum Walker, I mean, they play with some intensity. For them, it's a huge game, and you know, you always see it every time they come in. It can be a little scary, especially, you know, we don't want our guys looking past them, looking at Florida. If you mm-hmm. overlook, you know, we could lose a couple games.
Well, I mean, and like we said, Little Rock, since this change came 6 years ago, where Arkansas could play in-state teams again, Little Rock's beat them twice. Beat them in 19. Everybody remembers that game. Mm-hmm. Beat them again, I think it was in 23, the second of two games, like what they're doing this week. They played one time last year, and Arkansas run-ruled them. So they've beaten Arkansas twice. They've beaten Ole Miss under this coach. You know they can go in. And I guess maybe the biggest takeaway is that I don't think the stadium, the opponent, any of that's going to scare them.
No, I don't think it will, but I think something we have going for us is we have a lot of depth in our pitching still. We've still got a lot of guys we can run out there.
There were a lot of guys who didn't throw over the weekend.
I know.
Because of what Carter and Gackle did.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got a lot of guys that we can run out there Tuesday and Wednesday, so you feel good about it. I mean, I would assume Tate McGuire will start one of the games, probably Tuesday. But I just feel like we've got the depth in – midweek games that we haven't really had in the past, and so I still feel good about it, and I feel good about our offense, man. I still do. I thought facing three lefties, but once again, I'm going to go back to that. After you see them for 2 days in a row, I thought that third game we're going to light this dude up, but they were all different. They all had something different about them, but I still feel really good about the lineup. I think Iredale's coming along. He hit some balls hard this weekend, had some good at-bats. Still feel really good.
One more note on Little Rock. They've had a lot of injuries, is what Chris told me. He said they had about six of their everyday-type guys get hurt early in the season. Now, he said, and you can speak to this, he said there's been a lot of the replacements getting acclimated to being called upon and really being needed. And then, so they've added some experience and just some maturing. But then now they're able to, as they get these players back from injury, they're able to kind of inject them into a lineup, and it makes the lineup deeper and longer.
Well, it gives them a lot more depth to be able to maneuver and do matchups and stuff like that. And so, you know, them getting healthy right as they're coming to Fayetteville could be fun.
And Evan Lee's on their staff, who played for the Razorbacks from 17 to 18. Of course, was with the Nationals organization for a little while, back in Little Rock. And sounds like he's kind of like an assistant pitching coach type.
Yeah.
Chris told me he said he thinks he's going to be a star in the coaching world later down the line.
I know he spent a couple of summers coaching with the prospects, and they loved him. I mean, they loved him. Andy Menard talked about him all the time, how good he was with the pitchers, just the kids in general. And so he is. He's going to be a rock star. You'll hear a lot from him down the road.
I'm always fascinated to see how these former players and, you know, or even like in Chris Curry's instance, former assistant coaches, how they do, you know, further on down in their career. It seems like Van Horn's got a long, you know, deep-rooted coaching tree. So I guess you would put Evan Lee kind of in that. I think you certainly would put him in that coaching tree because he played for him, and then he's – you know, he's learning under a coach who coached under Van Horn.
You know, when you play for a coach, like I say all the time, that these players take on Dave's personality, especially by the end of the year. You know, you take on his personality, and then if you go on in a pro ball, you take that with you. If you go into coaching, you still take that with you. And so you can see little bits of Dave and a lot of guys spread out all over the country, whether they're still playing or now they're coaching.
Here's some trivia for you. Chris Curry caught at Meridian Community College. Who was the pitcher? Who was a pitcher? Most famous pitcher that he caught.
Oh, I know this. Give me a hint.
I think I get you every year on this. I think we go through this every year.
Probably so.
Won a Cy Young.
Just tell me.
It's Cliff Lee.
Oh,
yeah, Chris Curry was Cliff Lee's catcher for a year at Meridian. And then I think Chris was a year older. Then he ends up going to Mississippi State, and then Cliff ends up coming to Arkansas.
Yeah, okay. So you got me.
Yeah.
Next year I'll get it right.
Next year you will get it. So going back to this weekend, Brent Iredell, I thought he had he had a rough game. One, a couple of errors, didn't hit well, had two or three strikeouts. I thought on Saturday, though, or on Friday, I'm sorry, I thought on Friday it looked like that was maybe getting back toward the Brent Iredell that we've seen as a hitter.
Yeah. Well, one of the errors was a tough error. I mean, a ball he's coming in charging, kind of got away from him on the throw. So that's a really tough error. But, you know, you haven't really seen him take his bat to the field. So I don't think he has. But I thought he had some good at-bats. You know, as the weekend went on, hit some balls hard. I know Friday night he hit a ball into the wind, 102 that Lavalette caught in center. That a lot of times that's a home run. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ball was smoked, but it just didn't go anywhere. Nothing was carrying to center, especially right center, with that wind howling in. So I thought he hit that ball well. Hit several balls over the weekend over 100 miles an hour. So I think he's trending back in the right direction.
Yeah, had the sac fly in the first inning of the doubleheader, and I thought that was a huge at bat for him because I think he fouled off like four or five pitches during that at bat.
Yeah,
you could just see, okay, now it feels like his timing is back.
Yeah, he's getting close, and I don't think he matched up well. You know, I think if he's got a weakness, it's top of the zone. I think you throw him the ball down the zone, he hammers it. So I think he battled really well against three lefties that like to pitch at the top of the zone.
During the doubleheader, Iredell was 3-for-7, 3 RBI, and scored a run. The previous four games, 0-for-18 with 7 strikeouts. So a 3-for-7 over a couple of games really stands out whenever you've had that type of struggle. And then, you know, I thought Cahill Aloy played really well during this series. He raised his batting average to .386, raised his team-leading RBI to 57. I know he didn't get it done every time he got to the plate, but there were a lot of times where he came up in big moments and, he either had an RBI hit or he advanced a runner in some form.
It felt like in the first game on Friday, him and Fajiva kind of carried us. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just – both of them were on base. Fajiva was 3-for-5, Cahill 3-for-4. I mean, they just but you're right. The thing about – I say all the time, a swinging bat's a dangerous bat. And when Cahill gets a pitch that he likes or he thinks he likes, he doesn't get cheated. Mm-mm. I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, not a lot of take in there. I mean, he goes up there ready to hit, and I love it. I mean, if you swing and miss, you swing and miss. It's just strike one. But, yeah, I love his approach at the plate, and I think he's getting smarter at the plate too. He's getting up there, and I think there's times that he knows he's going to get a slider. He sits on it and hammers it.
I did not know how SEC play was going to go for him. You know, he gets out to such a great start against pitching that's, in a lot of cases, not SEC level. Not every game. I mean, he had some good games against good pitching too. But I've been pleasantly surprised that the batting average has not tanked in SEC play because, I mean, this is a true .386 average this many games into the season.
Yeah. I mean, if you get this deep in the season you're still doing that, you're a good hitter. You're getting it done. And the thing is, Matt, he's a force at the plate. So when he comes up, he's like Fajiva. Pitchers fear him because they know if they make a mistake, what's getting ready to happen. Same with Cahill. You make one mistake, he's going to hit it 400 feet. So, I mean, it's just it's tough.
Do you have his SEC stats over there?
Yes.
What's his SEC batting average right now?
SEC only.
I would have to think it's probably a pretty good number.
SEC only is .325.
I mean, you bat in .325 in SEC play. That's a legitimate number.
Yeah.
A strong number.
Yeah, I mean, good numbers across the board. Slugging .481, .391 on base percentage. But yeah, I mean, he's finding a way. The only thing he's doing a little bit more than we would like is striking out. He strikes out a little more.
But I think that was expected, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to take the good with the bad.
Fajiva struggled with strikeouts last year, and I know, and you draw a dangerous, you play a dangerous game when you're comparing two guys. But Fajiva, we've seen this year that, you know, there's not the swing and miss in his at-bats quite like there was last year in SEC play. And I wonder if maybe you'll see that with Cahill after he sees SEC pitching for a full season when he comes back next year.
Yeah, I think so. And the thing about Cahill, he's got 17 RBIs in SEC play. He has a knack for the big hit, though. That's what I like about him. I say all the time, it's not what you hit, it's when you hit. And he has a knack for that big hit.
Hey, what about Justin Thomas and the hits that he had?
Huge.
I mean, two home runs, but then, you know, the first game, he had two base hits. I feel like both of them were late in that game, too. Feels like maybe he's coming around a little bit. I know he didn't play so well in the last game, but felt like it was kind of that way across the board.
Well, once again, you look at SEC plays, he's up to 288 in SEC games. He's got four home runs, four pretty big home runs. It seems like when he hits one, it's a big one. So what I like about it, he hit a couple two-strike pitches over the fence, a couple sliders that he did a good job of staying on. So I thought he had good at-bats all weekend. I really did.
So looking around the SEC this weekend, obviously I think the big series that ever got everybody's attention was that Tennessee lost 2 of 3 to Kentucky after winning the series opener.
So I called that, and I don't remember with you or with Phil, but so the way Tennessee the way Kentucky plays, they're aggressive on the bases. If you've ever watched Tennessee, or if you remember last year, they do not hold runners well at all, and they don't play good defense. So Kentucky puts a lot of pressure on the defense. They stole 16 bases. I think they were like 16 for 18 over the weekend. And so, yeah, that really honestly didn't surprise me.
So Tennessee's lost two series now. They lost to A&M a few weeks back. Everybody in the SEC has lost at least two SEC series, with the exception of Texas, who I think they're like three games ahead of everybody in the standings right now. And that, to me, tells you a lot about the conference and just how hard it is to win from week to week.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, Texas 16-2, we're next at 13-5. I mean, it's but we know we talk about it every year how good the SEC is, and the margin for error is so small. I mean, a pitch here, a swing there is the difference in an SEC win or an SEC loss, and it's crazy. But yeah, Texas has been, you know, their pitching has been really good. Hitting wise, they're okay, but I mean, their pitching has just been dominant.
You just never know what you're going to get in this league from week to week. You look over South Carolina; they won 2 of 3 over Ole Miss. I didn't know that South Carolina was going to win a series this year. I'll be honest with you. Vanderbilt swept Georgia. You know, I mean, think about how well Georgia had been playing, and then all of a sudden, Vanderbilt sweeps them. Texas, they swept what I think is a pretty good Auburn team. OU swept Missouri, whatever. A&M, Arkansas, LSU won 2 of 3 against Bama. Kentucky won 2 of 3, obviously, against Tennessee. And Florida won 2 of 3 against Mississippi State. And that was a really competitive series between Florida and Mississippi State. I don't know if you watched any of that. I caught a little bit of the second game of that series on Saturday night. And it was a real high-scoring series throughout the weekend. But, you know, there were a few sweeps this weekend. Take Missouri out of the equation. You're just not seeing a whole lot of sweeps for the most part.
No, I mean, you're really not. And that just goes to show how competitive it is. And you look at some of the numbers that stood out for me. Like when you talk about A&M, their pitching isn't dominant, but they just don't walk you. What have they walked in SEC games only? 42 batters in SEC play only. And kind of the same with South Carolina. I mean, they don't walk you a lot. They have walked more in SEC play, but you know, there's just it's so competitive throughout the league, and so you know, and Dave talks about it all the time. You know, just one thing can be the difference in a series win and a series loss.
You know, Arkansas, they've got to win some games at Florida this weekend to keep them in that conference title hunt. But I feel like with everybody beating up on everybody else, they're still in a really good position right now, so long as they can figure out what they're going to do at second base and how everything else kind of, you know, trickles down from that.
Yeah, and I think one thing, I'm interested to see what A&M can do at Texas. If I was an A&M player, I would be just fired up to go to Texas and beat up on Texas. I'm sorry. With everything, the way that whole deal went down, that's not right. So I would hold a grudge, and I think I would elevate my game as soon as I went into Austin. But us going to Florida, I feel real good about that series. They're playing well, but I say it all the time. I'm still in on this team. I still like our team a lot. I like our lineup. We haven't – the whole lineup hadn't got going yet. But when we get going, it's going to be dangerous. I think the pitching staff's starting to come together. Gage Wood back in there, just mentally, it's a mental boost to the team. Get Parker Coyle back, and wow, we're going
to
be good.
Part of this has to do with the fact the college season is significantly shorter than pro baseball. But if you were in pro baseball, there's not any freaking out in the clubhouse if you lose two of three on back-to-back series.
No, there's not. And it shouldn't be with us because we could have swept Georgia. Mm-hmm. One pitch, one swing here and there, and we sweep that series. You kind of look at – I look at that – at A&M without the lightning delay, mm-hmm. which, you know, it is what it is. It's over. But without that lightning delay, we win that game, we win the series, and everyone's calm and cool. But now everyone's in panic mode because we lost two series in a row, and it's just – it's almost laughable to me. But now if we start getting blown out, then I get worried. But as long as we're giving ourselves a chance to win and we know we have guys hurt and – you know, some guys aren't going in the lineup right now. I feel really good about it.
Parker Coyle is going to be back for Arkansas before too long, too, and that's going to be another bullet to the bullpen that I think is certainly going to help this team. That's something that doesn't get mentioned a whole lot about what's happened over the last few weeks. I thought he was – I think he's their best reliever when he went down, quite honestly. Texas, I'll be surprised. These next 2 weeks, they got A&M and Arkansas, two teams that and fan bases that just want to, you know – kick them in the teeth. I'll be surprised if they've got two losses at the end of this stretch. We're going to learn a lot about Jim Schlossnagel's team, and so maybe the leader comes back to the pack a little bit and makes that SEC race a lot more interesting. Bubba, appreciate you being here. We appreciate you all being here with us as well. We'll have another podcast tomorrow. Bubba will be back in studio with us on Thursday to help break down what we saw against Little Rock. Also, this weekend's upcoming series against Florida. Hope we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, or on our podcast tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.